You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastian.
This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan and Boss Shot Shells.
Hungarian partridge are so delicious and very versatile. I just love them, but I mentioned earlier that sharptail are my sort of favorite bird to hunt, but I am in awe of Hungarian partridge. I think they are so beautiful. And earlier this year, I just was really astounded and excited to see the number of Hungarian partridge coveys we were running into. It hasn't been like that in years. And I just hope the winter's good to them this year, because one morning we found 7 coveys. And I have to tell you that they were big coveys. And the first covey that got up, I didn't even shoot. I literally stood there and went, wow. I got over it the next couple of them, but I just think it's really exciting to see them coming back.
I just returned home from a 3-day hunting trip to Eastern Montana for pheasant season opener, which seemed to be the place to be. It was definitely a learning experience for both me and my young Bracco Prim. I learned I need to locate more remote hunting locations, and Prim learned that birds don't get shot if they're not pointed. Ultimately, our timing worked out in unison, and as soon as I hit an area that even Onyx didn't have sorted properly in sharptail country, Prim pointed her first sharptail grouse. What kept my dogs fueled and ready to roll? As always, the very best Purina Pro Plan. Nothing compares to the digestibility and palatability of Pro Plan Sport 3020. I also give each dog Purina's Fortiflora probiotic in their meal each night. Between the travel, hunting, drinking out of the gross bits of water left in stream beds, I'm keeping their gut healthy because no one wants to clean up that mess in crates during their travel. Small, firm, and dark, the way poop ought to be, thanks to Pro Plan 3020 and Fortiflora. I've hunted several U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service areas this season so far, which required non-toxic shot. I don't have to worry about switching out ammo where I hunt. I only shoot Boss Shot Shells, copper-plated bismuth. A couple weeks ago, Lee Chost joined Hannah Leonard of Sporting Lead Free and I on a video call as we were preparing for a presentation for Women's Forest Grouse Camp. So, this will be exclusive content available only to Patreon patrons. He goes through shotgun patterning, recommended shot size, chokes, and much more. Lee Chost is one of the most passionate people I know when it comes to birds, habitat, and conservation. Go to patreon.com/thebirddogbabe to join. Ladies, if you haven't at least tried out and shot a siren shotgun, you need to. Yes, you can shoot birds with any shotgun handed to you, but you deserve to know what it feels like to have one that fits you. Shotguns are made to fit the average man. Chopping off part of the stock leaves it unbalanced and awkward. Siren fits most women right out of the box. Go to their website and find a local demo facility to help you shoot comfortably and confidently at sirenusa.com. The temperature was down to the high 30s, so it was time to put some insulated covers on the Dakota 283 kennels this weekend. I love that I can pull a Bracco out in the morning and they feel toasty warm. Their muscles need that to recover from hunting the day before and be warmed up and ready to go in the morning. Your bird dog is a big investment. It deserves to be protected and travel safely in a Dakota 283 kennel. Get 10% off by using promo code BIRDDOGBABE. My guest today is Sarah Tilt. Sarah is the executive director of One Montana, an organization that works to create a sustainable and resilient Montana by connecting rural and urban communities. One of their programs they created for that purpose is the Montana Master Hunter. The Montana Master Hunter program provides advanced hunter education that increases skills, competence, ethical behavior, and knowledge of agriculture and stewardship. Applications are now open until November 30th. Sarah shares more information on the program and shares some of her and my favorite recipes from her cookbook, Game On, A Bird Hunter's Table Reloaded. All right, now let's get after it.
Hey, Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Courtney. It's really great to be here. And thank you for wanting to talk with me.
Absolutely. You are doing a lot of awesome things in Montana for the state, for the ranchers, for hunters, for conservationists. So I'm excited to kind of tackle all the things that are going on right now with you.
Feels like it's a busy time and the best part of the season to be talking about this since it is hunting season.
Tell listeners who you are and what you're doing.
I'm Sarah Tilt and I live in Bozeman, Montana, and I run a small nonprofit called One Montana. And I love more than anything in the fall to be out bird hunting with my dogs. Courtney, you kind of set me up to give a couple of thoughts here on who got me into hunting. That would be my father. He taught me how to hunt and to fish at a very young age. And I followed him around trying to emulate him.
Did you grow up with bird dogs?
We did. My dad always had Labradors and then later on had both Brittany's and Drothars.
Awesome. So what do you have now in your life?
I have an older Brittany who's 13, and we have two small Munsterlanders who are 8 and 5.
So tell me how the Munsterlanders came into your life, because that's not a very common breed. You've had to have had some sort of past experience or done some major research and why you chose that breed.
Well, the fun part about that is, they're a wonderful breed. They're wonderful to work with. They're biddable and they're great in the field and they're great at home. My husband, Whitney, had a Munsterlander when I met him, or not when I met him, because I've known him for 30 years, but he had a Munsterlander that he had gotten really on a whim, and he turned out to be just an amazing hunting dog. And after we got married, we had Blaze and we had my Brittany, and when Blaze was getting a little older, we had a long discussion about, do we get another Munsterlander? Do we get another Brittany? And we chose to get a puppy who's a Birdie, who is now 5. When we lost Blaze, the breeder called us and asked if we would adopt Birdie's mother, which we ended up doing a couple years later. So now we have the two of them.
Hmm. Well, fun. And you have a Brittany in the mix.
We do.
So what will be your next breed? Are you pretty dedicated to either of those? Or are you thinking about something different that intrigues you in the future?
Oh, I think it'll be either a Brittany or another Munsterlander, for sure. We just really like the breed. It's the Munsterlanders, you can encourage to run a little bigger. They tend to stay a little close. And with having the Brittany allows us, she gets out there pretty far. So it's been a nice mix so far. So who knows? I'm not thinking about next dogs yet.
So what have you been hunting so far this season?
Well, this season we've been really lucky to get into a fair number of huns and sharp-tailed grouse. We're going this weekend for the pheasant opener, so hopefully we'll see more of the same and adding pheasant to that list.
Nice. What is your personal favorite bird to hunt?
Sharp-tailed grouse.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why? What is it about the sharp tail that you like the best?
I think the habitat. You do a lot of walking to find them, but I like the way they popcorn. They're just a fun bird, and they cackle at you. It's just always, they're beautiful. And if you ever have been able to witness a spring lek, it's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Do you prefer early season or late season sharp tail?
Early season, although, because they do group up, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
But late season can be just as fun. You're probably going to shoot a lot less.
Right. And you know, they're foraging on so much more yummy stuff early season too.
Yeah.
So
the rose hips, and this year, a lot of wheat and grasshoppers.
Yes. Yeah. The grasshoppers have been plentiful. More this year than I've seen, I think, in the last 2 years. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree. And the hardest part about this year, you can't talk about this season without mentioning drought and the dryness that's out there. And, that does definitely affect where the birds are. It's just been astonishing to me, though, that because we had a mild winter, we have more birds. They seem to be more congregated around any water, mm-hmm. rather than spread out. I mean, we're finding the Hans and the Sharps are grouped up together where we've been.
Right. Yep. That's the same that I've noticed as well. Very few are getting up as singles.
Yeah.
With One Montana, you talked a little bit about being the nonprofit. Can you get into a little bit more about what the organization is really all about?
Sure, I'd love to. One Montana, our mission is to connect our urban and rural communities. And I feel like that mission was created well before its time. And today it's really true that we need to be working even more diligently to make sure our rural communities and our urban communities are connected. Our work is really about building trust and fostering relationships that support private land stewardship. They maintain agriculture and working lands, and we preserve cultural heritage. And our work is centered around connecting people, building relationships, and aggregating resources and expertise. Most of our work is, all of our work is collaborative, and most of it is educational. We've worked on a variety of things, including climate change and water issues. But we've really come back to our roots now, and we focus only on working with landowners and agriculture communities, and connecting our urban to our agriculture in a variety of ways. So we've been since I'll give you a good example. One of our programs is called the Montana Master Hunter Program. This grew out of conversations that we were having with landowners about the challenges with wildlife management. And that may sound like a interesting dynamic on how do you get a Master Hunter education program out of conversations with landowners about about wildlife management. And one of the challenges landowners have is that, wildlife, they do through stewarding their lands for livestock. They're also stewarding their lands for wildlife. Wildlife can cause a lot of damage. And the one way the state of Montana manages wildlife is through hunting. And there's a lot of opportunities in Montana for public hunting. But there's also challenges with that, and many landowners have chosen to close their doors because they've had hunters who've had bad behavior. So when you start to look at all of these things together, those are the kinds of complicated or complex problems that we look at and try to solve. And so we came up with the Montana Master Hunter Program, which really is about building and improving relationships between landowners and sportsmen.
And that has been, the program has been since 2018, correct?
Yes.
It's yielding more ethical, educated, and effective hunters. And when you had mentioned there just a little bit ago about, landowners having problems with bad behaviors, can you give a couple examples of what you mean there and what you guys took on that to try to improve in the Master Hunter program?
I think one of the biggest challenges is trying to help people understand the impact that their actions have on the resources and on the land. So, things as simple as closing gates can make a huge difference for a landowner on a piece of property. If you are a hunter and you go through and you forget or you don't close the gate, what does that do? And you may cause him several more hours that he didn't plan on using to have to round up cattle that got into an area they weren't supposed to get to. Mm-hmm. Staying on roads is really important. The damage and the potential for bringing weeds on, or all those types of things, they may sound small. You also have, if we get into, some of the real challenges of, shooting in the wrong places right near the homestead when you're not supposed to. There's so many different things that go on out there. Or, I don't know if you saw the article in the Billings Gazette about what happened in Wyoming just a couple of days ago when there was a group of hunters shot several elk, and then they realized they couldn't go pick them up because of where they were.
Right.
Things like that are just, they don't help hunters have a good name. Mm-hmm.
And being effective hunters as well. I mean, this is,
yes,
at the graduation of the class, that's something that is required to pass, yeah, is be an effective shot. And I mean, which for me as a bird hunter, that was a big, wide, big awakening. I definitely spent time at the range practicing with a rifle. But that's important to not just be out there injuring animals, but knowing how and taking those ethical kill shots.
Absolutely. And that gets back to the fair chase idea. And, really understanding that I think you need to know everyone needs to know their own effective range with their rifle. Mm-hmm. We do have a qualification in the Master Hunter program to shoot a target at 250 yards, but that may not be everybody's effective range. And I think it's really important for everyone to know what that is and to take shots that make sense for you as an individual. Fair chase, as I mentioned, is sort of this concept of lawful pursuit, which is also really important. So not shooting out of a car window, I guess one caveat or exception to that might be if you are a wounded warrior veteran, but for the most part, it's lawful pursuit of taking any of our wild game animals in a manner that the hunter doesn't have an unfair advantage over the game animals.
Also in the class, there's lots of educational pieces with ethics, conservation, how to access different types of public lands, what's all involved with those. There's a lot to it, even the history.
Yep.
That are things that, I wasn't so much aware of some of the issues, what led to the conservation acts. And it's all great knowledge to have. And it helps you appreciate everything just a whole lot more, I think.
I think that's the real hope, is that, this class is really for hunters who see hunting as a lifelong pursuit and want to keep learning. We are continuing, you mentioned some of the classes, but students learn everything from the history of conservation and ethics to wildlife disease, invasive and noxious weeds, and even how to negotiate the legislature. to be voices for sportsmen and to be voices for hunters and the hunting heritage.
And the landowner panel, yeah. I think that was one of my favorite parts of the class, was having that interaction with the landowners and them sharing their concerns, us sharing our perspectives of how we view landowners and ranchers, and just having that open table of communication was incredibly informative.
Yeah, that, so we, for listeners, the landowner panel is actually a full day where we invite a number of landowners to come in and have a discussion with the participants in the program. And it's commonly cited as the best portion of the class. Most people really enjoy it. And it is one way. I mean, again, this goes back to One Montana's mission of bridging the urban rural divide and really creating space for these conversations to happen. And for all of us to learn, you know, what keeps a landowner up at night, and why is that a challenge? And how does my hunting affect the wildlife movement that can affect things on a ranch? So that's, I think you captured it beautifully, Courtney. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think it's unfortunate that every state doesn't have something equivalent to this program. You know, it's just not something that your typical hunter's ed covers. And hopefully there's discussions of you guys being able to share and spread what's going on with this program in Montana with other states, so they can have those opportunities as well. Is there any talks on that?
Well, there has been, but they, because of COVID, some of those have stalled. We're very open to trying to work with other nonprofits or agencies in other states to try and figure out how this could be implemented elsewhere. Certainly all of our online materials can be replicated. Now that we've done this for five years, I think we have a good idea of how it could be easily replicated, and we're really interested in doing that.
Speaking on the front though, with your specific program, you guys just opened applications for this on the 1st of October, right?
We did. And the application period will be open until November 30th. So,
okay.
So 2 full months.
2 months. And what does the application look like? What can people expect to have to answer?
Well, I will say the application is not sort of just a sign up for the Master Hunter class. You do have to think about a few things. We want folks who can think critically. So there are a few essay questions. This year, we actually, on the application page on our website, which is mtmasterhunter.com, and there is a list of the questions on that are in the application to make that easier for people to prepare, so that you could actually go, you know, write some of your questions ahead of time and then cut and paste them in, which will make the application process a little bit easier. But we do, you know, we want people to think critically about, and we have a couple of scenarios where, you know, we're asking you really to understand how you think.
Let's just like maybe look at this past year. How many people applied?
So for the 2021 classes, we had 245 applications, and we accepted 103. Unfortunately, classes in the early part of this year were still affected by COVID, so our locations limited us to 25 people per class. We usually accept 25 to 30 applicants per class, so up to 120 people for 2022.
Okay. And your city, your locations that you hold the classes, they change a little bit every year. So like this year, my class was up in Kalispell, but you will be having one in Missoula in 2022.
Yep. Missoula, Helena, Big Timber, and Haver for 2022.
Okay. So 4 locations, and each of those classes will be 25 to 30 people each.
Yep.
Okay.
And the other thing, Courtney, that we changed from last year was instead of 3 consecutive weekends, we're doing 2 consecutive 3-day weekends.
Oh, okay. And then the rendezvous. So
and then the rendezvous.
Which is the testing weekend. And
yes.
Okay.
That's when you do your land navigation and your shooting qualification. And this year we introduced a tracking class, mm-hmm. Which I don't know whether we'll have as a qualifier, but it's a really fun class, and we'll have that again this coming year.
Okay. What about application fee? When they go online to fill out the application, are they paying a fee?
You'll pay a $10 fee that, if you're accepted into the program, will be knocked off the price of the class. Okay. And the price of the class for 2022 will be $450 per person.
Okay.
And I know that sounds a little steep, but participants are getting about a $1,600 to $1,800 per person. If you had to sort of, you know, do it out that way, that's sort of the value they get. And we do offer scholarships. So scholarships up to 250 last year, and we may be able to go to 300 this year, but we'll see. We're in the process of raising the funds to cover those scholarships now.
Okay. And the scholarship applications, those need to be filled out the same time as the regular application. Is that right?
They just have to fill out both. They don't need to be done at exactly the same time, but they do need to fill out two applications. And the scholarship application is very simple.
When will they find out if they're accepted or not?
We hope to be able to tell people by December 31st.
What about a little bit of the demographics of the classes? I mean, what have you guys seen in the past? You've had like, what, 12 classes since 2018 then?
12 classes, and they've moved around the state. We have currently 237 graduates from the program. And of that, 15% are women. What I would say is, that's total. Okay. And that number may go up when we do statistics, when we do some more testing, but it's about 15% women. The average age of the participants is around 45, although our oldest who attended was 81. So I wouldn't discourage anyone from attending between 21 and 81 or over. Mm-hmm. We have graduates representing 41 cities and towns from across Montana, and that's probably all the statistics.
Okay. And what are some of the things that once graduated, well, first of all, I guess if they take the class and they don't pass, they don't graduate, whether it be the from the written examination or the skills navigation shooting testing, do they have the option to take the class again? Or how does that work?
Yeah, there's a couple of options, and I'm really glad you brought this up, Courtney, because we really value taking this class as an investment, and we want to honor the investment that everybody is making to do this class. So there's a couple of things. If you actually pass the final, then, you know, we would ask you to come back and be part of the class the following year, just to really refine what was missed and hopefully provide very specific feedback. And depending on how that is, you might just take the online portion again, or you might actually sit through some of the classes again and then retake the final. And then you would go on to do your shooting and your land navigation qualifications. If you're at the rendezvous and you don't pass, you have 2 tries at passing your shooting qualification, and you have, and then obviously the land nav. If you don't pass either one, you will be given another opportunity, either a separate day that can be done following the program later in the year, or just go back and attend either the shooting the shooting field days as part of the class again, and retake your qualifications at that point.
What about after they've graduated? What comes next?
So when you graduate from this program, you do become part of a community, and it's a community that supports each other, hunts with each other, informs each other. And so you're encouraged to, I mean, there's a couple of things. One, to keep your certification, we ask that you can do 8 hours of volunteer service per year and 8 hours of continuing education per year. And that could be through programs that we offer, such as archery certification, or this year we did a bison butchery program. We are looking next year, we'll probably have a class on reloading ammunition. So we will continue to provide opportunities for graduates to get their continuing ed this way, or you can do it by mentoring youth or new hunters. You can do it by being a hunter ed instructor, or being on a citizen advisory board for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, or any number of opportunities to fulfill these hours. One of the things we do offer that I think it takes this program to the next level is offering what we call volunteer on-ranch service opportunities. And these are days that we have where graduates can sign up to go and work on a ranch. And it's a curated day. We'll start with the landowner talking about their operations and sort of what they do on the ranch. And then students will go out and work, and you might be doing working on repairing wildlife friendly fencing, or weed spraying, or creating a beaver mimicry dam, or any number of hard work and good activities. It might be walking miles of fence and putting sage grouse markers on it so that the sage grouse don't fly into them. Then there's usually a discussion at lunch about various challenges and the things the landowners face. And these are a real opportunity for sportsmen and landowners to come together and learn from each other and understand that they have shared values. And it's really one of the ways that I think this program is helping change behaviors and helping create voices that support private landowners and create partnerships.
Mm-hmm. And with some of those landowners that One Montana is partnered with, I mean, that was part of just last week for me was I have never hunted on private land before, and being a graduate opened that opportunity for me to contact one of those partners and say, you know, introduce myself that I'm a graduate of Montana Master Hunter. And, you know, they provided the opportunity for me to hunt sage grouse on their property. And, you know, it wasn't one of those, well, this is where they normally are. There you go. Go, you know, right there. You'll get into them. I mean, I spent 15 miles walking the first day trying to find them. And luckily, on the final day of the season, I was able to harvest my first sage grouse, which was an incredible opportunity. But to have that ability to be on that kind of habitat that they take such care and pride of was just incredible in itself. And I plan on going back in the spring just to watch the lek dances happen there, because it's a magical thing.
It's really special. And I think you bring up a good point. We do. So this program is not an access program, mm-hmm. but we, because of the relationships that we build with landowners, the landowners we work with really want ethical and people who they know they can have on their properties to respect the land and close the gates, go where they want them to. And so we have about 26 ranches in the program. Oh, actually, I think that number's gone up to 30. We also have a number of informal partners. So I mentioned the service projects, and I would say the service projects we did some of them in partnership with some of the landowner led collaboratives like Blackfoot Challenge or Madison Rangelands Group or Heart of the Rockies High Divide Collaborative. And what when we do those projects, some of the ranches aren't necessarily part of our program yet, but almost to a T, they all invite the volunteers who've been working on those projects out to hunt that season, even if they're not formally part of the program. Mm-hmm. So this program does create opportunities, and you know, more important, we're going to teach you how to go talk to a landowner so that you can ask permission yourself.
Right. Right. So it's, you don't walk up and go, "Hey, looks like you have a whole bunch of pheasant in your land over here. Can I go hunt those?"
Well, and you don't do that on October 8th. You do that on June 1st.
Right. And for Pete's sake, I mean, everybody, please pick up your hulls. Gosh, that is my biggest pet peeve, hunting out there on public land, is the amount of shotgun hulls that are laying all over the place. It drives me crazy. Pick them up. Because or else my 3-year-old and my 7-year-old are out there picking them up after you. Not cool.
No, we all need to practice more leave no trace principles when we're hunting.
Yeah.
Usually, you know, I pick up more trash than I come in with. You know, the reward isn't, it's, you know, you may not find a bird, but how much wildlife have you seen when you're out there?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, if you're looking around, I mean, oh, I'll give you a good example. Two weekends ago, we were out hunting. We saw two deer attack a coyote.
Wow.
I've never seen anything quite like it. It was amazing. Wild World of Omaha.
were they does? Were there babies nearby? Or
we didn't see any sign of babies, because that would have been the normal thing, but we didn't see any sign of babies.
Interesting.
And I don't know, you know, the coyote could have come just close, just gotten too close and not realized it. It looked like a young one, but it was pretty amazing. And there were pheasants flushing everywhere, and it was crazy.
Incredible. Super cool. Yeah. Stuff like that you don't even get to see on National Geographic.
So. Nope.
Sarah, was there anything else that you wanted to cover with the Master Hunter program?
No, I think we've covered it pretty well. And what I would say is, you know, visit our website, which I mentioned before is mtmasterhunter.com. Check out our application page. And if you have questions, please reach out. We'll do our best to get back to you.
And I can't stress it enough how great of a program it is. And you guys are adding a wing shooting element or component to it as well, aren't you?
Well, that would be one of the continuing ed programs that I mentioned. We did an archery certification this past August, and we had planned to do a wing shooting one, but we just had to postpone it. So we'll probably host that earlier in the year.
Okay. Another thing too that I saw was going on with some of the graduates is the graduates themselves getting together and going on hunts, and which is a really cool way to, you know, just have community within as well, because I mean, we're out there being ambassadors for hunting, but it's also a great way to gather with like-minded people that you don't have to worry about are making bad decisions that you're hunting with. So I mean, I know the class that I graduated with they're fantastic. And the rendezvous, I wasn't able to attend it with my class, but I went to another one and they were amazing as well. So it's a great community of people to be around.
No, it's a great point. And I mentioned before that when you graduate, you really become part of a community that enjoys spending time with each other. And I'll mention that each, we have some really, really outstanding volunteers who not only come back and want to help with the actual classes and the programming and teach and a variety of other things, but we have social coordinators. And these are volunteers, they're graduate volunteers who are coordinating lots of activities and ways for graduates to get together, whether it's hunting or last year, they did a lot of, a number of them, they do pint nights. They set up shooting days and just different opportunities by region. And I think that's just a really another neat benefit.
So let's talk a little bit about one of the favorite books that I have in my house right now. That's been a pretty frequent go-to since season started, that you and your husband authored. Game On, A Bird Hunter's Table Reloaded. This isn't your typical cookbook by any means. Can you tell us a little bit about what you encompass with this book?
Well, and Courtney, thank you for that. Such high praise that you use the book and are enjoying it.
That means
a great deal to me. I really appreciate it. I'm going to say really quickly that this book is the second book. It came after a book called A Bird Hunter's Table that was a tribute to my father and what he had taught me about hunting and also in the field. It was focused very much on birds. Game On is really a cookbook focused on big game, there's fish and birds in this book. So we try to cover the gamut. We have a number of, it's really a story as well. It's a cookbook and there are recipes, but I would say you could pick this up and read through it and enjoy the stories and the essays that we've included that are really about the love of the land and our place in it and why we revel in it and why we hunt and why we enjoy bringing game to hand and making wonderful meals for friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that really encompasses it. I mean, this is a book that I like to keep out on display that if, you know, when we have company over, that they'll just pick up and grab and enjoy, whether it gives them recipe ideas or whether it's some of the great quotes that you guys include in there. The photos are amazing. It's great. And I got to tell you though, Sarah, what I love is how many different Hungarian partridge recipes you guys have, because those are very few and far in between to find. So thank you.
I think they didn't used to be. But Hungarian partridge are so delicious and very versatile. I just love them, but I mentioned earlier that sharptail are my sort of favorite bird to hunt, but I am in awe of Hungarian partridge. I think they are so beautiful. And earlier this year, I just was really astounded and excited to see the number of Hungarian partridge coveys we were running into. It hasn't been like that in years. And I just hope the winter's good to them this year, because one morning we found 7 coveys. And I have to tell you that they were big coveys. And the first covey that got up, I didn't even shoot. I literally stood there and went, wow. I got over it the next couple of them, but I just think it's really exciting to see them coming back.
How well they're thriving. Yeah. Absolutely. They're a cool bird. You know, one of our dogs I swear that's her favorite bird. She's a bit more intense on point, a bit more eyes bulging out of her head, excited, maybe a little bit more wag of the tail as she's coming back with that bird with the retrieve. They're a cool bird. I really like them. What do you feel in the culinary game bird? What is one of the most misunderstood or perhaps not properly prepared birds that people don't appreciate?
I would think sharptail and ducks. Mm-hmm. I think unfortunately people have had experiences where they've just been overcooked. They are both a red meat, and most people tend to overcook them, not realizing that's the case. And then they taste like liver, and you've lost that person who won't enjoy it.
Right.
Whereas, you know, pheasant can dry out, but it's more versatile. Hungarian partridge has a wonderful, very delicate flavor. But they're not as easily ruined, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with you. So I haven't had much duck because I'm not a big waterfowl hunter, and it's hard for me to sit still. I'd rather be out walking the uplands, but,
I'm right there with you.
Yeah. But you know, the sharp tail, and I can't tell you how many people will say, I just can't get them to taste right. I'm just not real a big fan, but I had sharp tail for the first time last year, and my husband prepared it for that first time, and it was amazing. And we just had it again two nights ago. And when I was looking through recipes, I go, that's what we use, is that one that you have the sauteed, it's Hungarian partridge or sharp tail, but that's just it. It's just butter, olive oil, salt and pepper, saute 5 minutes on each side. That's perfection. Don't throw bacon on it. Don't over cook it. Don't just enjoy it to all the way of what the bird is.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite, but the most simple recipe there is.
Mm-hmm. What else? What is another one of your favorite ways for sharp tail?
So I've got in the book, it's called Wild Duck with Giant Croutons. Okay. That's actually my favorite recipe to do with sharp tail. Mm. It's just got a wonderful. You've got a number of herbs, and you have the crunch of creating these big croutons and bacon, and you have spice, and it's just a really wonderful combination of flavors and texture.
Yeah. And what about duck? What is that going to be your favorite for duck as well?
No, let me try to refresh my, wild duck. So another really simple recipe is this wild duck breast with cilantro butter. Mm. Sometimes you don't need to go really complicated. This one involves a marinade. And then again, grilling them really quickly. And the key is then you're having cilantro butter on the top. Now, I can't eat cilantro butter, so I do something a little bit different for people who can't have dairy, but that is a very wonderful one.
You have several like jams and dressings and sauce recipes in here as well.
Yep.
And all great toppers for a lot of the bird recipes you have. Well, I suppose all of the recipes in here, but that's what I use mostly, the bird ones.
Well, one of my favorites of those would be the plum. I think it's a plum, just called a favorite plum sauce.
Plum sauce. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. What about the Hungarian partridge recipe? Which one of those? You have several in here. What is your kind of favorite go-to?
We already talked about just the basics sautéed. I haven't done this one for a while, but the fried Hungarian partridge is really good.
Okay. I was just looking at that one too.
And what one thing I will say is most of these recipes can be interchanged. I think, you know, and again, for those people who might not hunt and so they don't have game, you can now buy pheasant or quail at most markets. And you can substitute Cornish game hen or chicken for a lot of these recipes.
And will you interchange some of your white meat and dark meat recipes with each other? Or do you like to keep it pretty specific?
No, so you can do that. You just have to be, again, you've got to adjust the cooking time based on the meat that you're choosing. For example, the sharptail with blackberry brandy sauce is a really great recipe. That can be done easily with Hungarian partridge. So you just want to choose the right one. It probably work with pheasant just as well. But you know, then again, as I mentioned before, pheasant can easily dry out. One of my favorite techniques that is not in this book is with pheasant particularly, I've started sous-vide.
Okay.
Which really makes a difference. And then you can make a wonderful sauce that goes with it. And it becomes a really elegant dish without a lot of fuss.
And you mentioned too earlier about the importance of the temperature of the bird. So, you know, we can take what would be a typical chicken recipe, but knowing that game birds are more lean, to keep that in mind, because it'll be easy to overdo game birds if you're using the same temperatures and time durations as you are with chicken or store-bought birds.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you're substituting chicken into any of these recipes, you probably want to increase some of the time.
Right. A couple times in the book, you mentioned proper care on the way to the table and how important that is. Can touch a little bit on that and what your recommendations are.
Yeah, I think the key is, you know, if you care for the birds will reward you when you eat them.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly, you know, getting them field dressed, you know, when you come off the field as quickly as possible and getting them into a cooler temperature. Some people will say, you know, they age them for a while. I don't choose to do that. I also am not going to say if you put a bird in a refrigerator and you can't get to it to clean it for a couple of days, that's probably okay. But the sooner you do it, the better. It's not going to hurt anything terribly if you're too busy and you need to let it rest for a little bit. I think the biggest choice you have to make is, do you want to pluck? Do you want to breast? What do you have the time for? What do you think you're going to be cooking the most? And, you know, I'm lucky enough that we will hunt enough this season. I will choose to do all of that. If time is limited, I might just breast some birds. Hungarian partridge, I love whole birds and grilling them and, you know, putting something in the cavities. A sharptail, I think sharptails do better breasted. But you can certainly grill those as well whole. I just have better luck keeping the meat consistent when I cook it. Pheasant, I tend to usually breast them out. But every once in a while, it's fun to have whole birds for it can be like Thanksgiving,
yeah.
You know, and just have it more of a celebration. So that's fun to do. I love roasting whole pheasants.
Do you ever leave the feed on them?
I rarely, but but I've seen that done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Kind of freaks me out a little bit.
Yeah,
not going to lie.
It's not something that I want to put on my table.
Yeah, I just, it, right away, my mind goes to pigeon feet in our coop. Like, and I just, you know, and they have poop on their feet and, or in the bird bag. And I just like, yeah, I don't know.
No, I have a new vision. No, but I think to your question, I think using as much of the bird as possible is also part of what I mean by caring for it. So, often we have a wonderful florist who's, not too far from here, and, I give her the pelts of almost all the pheasants we do. Mm. We will occasionally give her a sharp-tailed pelt. They're harder to get whole. But I keep wings and tail feathers and others of almost every bird for decorations. So I think, you know, honoring that bird and really looking at the beauty, their beauty.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. I feel the same way. I love finding awesome projects to make, with the pelts or the feathers.
Yeah.
I'm actually personally struggling right now with what I want to do with those sage grouse, because they're just a treasure, and I don't know that I'm just going to be able to do them justice of whatever I decide. Super cool birds.
Yeah. No, they're beautiful. I'm so glad you had that experience. Mm. Sage grouse are, you know, we are lucky, and hopefully we can continue to improve habitat for sage grouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, going forward, it's not going to be a bird that I'm out there actively looking for. I, because like you, I really enjoy the hunt for sharp tail and huns. But grateful for the opportunity for the sage grouse, because I don't know how much longer we're going to be able to have those opportunities.
Well, and Courtney, I did something similar. It was quite a while ago. I really wanted to see and hunt for a sage grouse, and had that opportunity. And I don't think I've shot one since. I actually, my father found them to be his favorite bird to eat. Interesting enough. So in my first book, I have a couple of sage grouse recipes that came directly from him. And I used one when I had that bird, and it was delicious. But I think it's interesting because there's a controversy, you know, most people won't eat sage grouse. And in my view, I'm like, well, then you should not hunt it.
Right.
You do need to eat what you hunt.
Right.
So the other, and I should say, I didn't mention that, you know, in using all of the bird, one of my favorite things to do is to make pate. So we always have pate around this house, but it's made from wild game birds. So I save all the hearts and livers. I freeze them. And then once or twice a year, I'll make a big batch and then save them in ramekins. So they're great gifts. They're great for, you know, hors d'oeuvres if you're having people over. And that recipe's in the book. And I make it dairy-free, but it's just as easy to do full dairy, and you don't have to use, I think my list of spices is extensive. You don't have to do that. You can use whatever is convenient and what flavors you like. So
now I need to know what that sage grouse recipe was from your dad, since I don't have the other book. And
I will have to send it to you.
Yeah, please do, because I was just planning on doing the same as we did with the sharp tail. So, but now, you know, we have a couple options, of how to prepare them. So yeah, I'd be really interested in that. I did see the one you have one sage hen recipe, I believe, in this book. And I don't know if that would be different than the one you mentioned.
I'll have to look. I don't recall. And I, you know, it's quite possible I would have put something in just to honor my dad.
Yeah, it's page 101.
We'll take a look.
Sage hen and chucker kebabs.
Oh, no, that's not it.
That's not it?
But okay. Those are good.
Okay.
Those are very good. This one is a stuffed, it's a roasted, it's easy. It's barbecued.
Okay. Yeah, you'll have to send me that, because now I want to try it.
I would be happy to.
Yeah. What about snipe? Have you prepared any snipe?
I have once.
Okay.
And ever since then, I mean, it was one of those experiences. We were out and a snipe, Whit yelled snipe, and I actually shot it, and I was surprised mm-hmm. because they move so fast.
Yeah, they do.
And so I did snipe on toast.
Okay.
Wasn't sure what to do with them. It was such a, they're so small, mm-hmm. But I seasoned it. And then I really flash, cooked it in a, you know, very quickly. And then had it with a big crouton, and they were delicious. And we just had it as an hors d'oeuvre.
Yeah.
This is barbecued sage hen or blue grouse. It's very simple. It's the full bird, and I'll send it to you, but you make a foil dish. Okay. And you may or may not want to try it, but
I'm going to try it. Sorry. I was just got into the snipe mentality here.
I know.
I had one last year and I just got one, the other day there. Yeah. What's weird. And I don't know what your experience was. They get up and then both times they've flown behind me. Usually yeah. Birds get up and they go forward or the side, and the snipe went right past me. So, you know, the shots were taken completely pivoted backwards. Mm-hmm. Was that your experience?
I've seen it both ways. And I think it depends on where, because usually they're in pretty wet habitat.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I found is if you're at the end of, say, a slough, they're going to turn around and go back.
Okay.
They don't want to leave that protective part. But that's a theory. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're super tasty little morsel in themselves as well. So, yeah. Oh my goodness. I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, no, they're delicious. And again, it's that you don't need to do much to them.
Yeah. And I have what I feel like is a super picky palate. So yeah, the fact that I prefer sharp tail and snipe, mm-hmm. I think it's pretty unique. Some people may say, but like you said, I think just too much is being overcooked,
yeah.
And you're not able to enjoy them.
Yeah, I have a friend who very adamantly was hunting with us and very adamantly was saying how he will not eat sharptail. And I said, then you shouldn't shoot them.
Yeah.
And he was giving them to his dog.
Oh, no. So. How sad.
It's sad for us. It's great for his dog, I guess.
Sure. You know, yeah.
I just think it's
five-star restaurant meal for the dog.
But I'm like, yeah, but if you just let me try.
Right. No kidding. I mean, even on the tailgate, that's easy to do and make them awesome.
Yeah.
Sharp tail, I think.
Yeah. I'm glad you agree.
Yeah, for sure. Well, tell us where listeners can find your awesome book.
It's available at birdhunterstable.com.
Okay.
We did have it on Amazon, but we've just removed it. Just if you've ever worked with Amazon, it can be kind of challenging. So mm-hmm. There are a couple of stores in Bozeman that carry it. Heyday for one. And sometimes the little bookstore in Livingston will carry it.
Okay. And Hunt to Eat has it on their website too, or yes, at least they did.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. For yep.
Hunt awesome. To Eat is a great partner, and I know you partner with them on a variety of things, and mm-hmm. they're terrific. So.
They are. They're amazing. Awesome. And then you already said, but tell us again where we can apply for the Master Hunter program.
It's the website is mtmasterhunter.com.
All right. And I will be including links to these in the show notes as well. So people can just click on it and get to them right away. But yeah. And then where can we learn more about One Montana?
At onemontana.org.
Perfect. And you are on Instagram as well.
Yes.
What about Facebook?
We are on Facebook, One Montana.
Okay. Perfect. I'll put those in there.
Both of those. And I think Master Hunter is MT Master Hunter.
On Instagram. Yes.
Instagram and then Facebook for Instagram for One Montana would be One Montana as well.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sarah. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Courtney. This has been really fun.
It has. And I hope you have a great rest of the season chasing your dogs around Montana.
You too. We'll have to swap stories and try to get out one of these days.
Absolutely.
You've just finished another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. If you're interested or have any questions about the Montana Master Hunter program, please reach out. I'm happy to share my experiences and help answer questions. We all have room to grow in our journey in the uplands, and hopefully it's to do more, learn more, and be better ambassadors of the sport. Be sure to check out the sponsors and partners of this podcast for all your bird, dog, and hunting needs. Purina Pro Plan, Boss Shot Shells, Siren Shotguns, and Dakota 283. And if you're loving this podcast and want to support it, get additional discounts and content, go to patreon.com/thebirddogbabe to sign up. Conservation and habitat are the cornerstone to what we love. Support the organizations of the birds you're chasing after and the public lands in which you hunt. Future generations depend on it.